Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
People, Coach Jen here in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Helena B. in the far frozen north. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 29th, 2013. This is episode 776.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
Somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Hi-ho, Helena!
Heidi-ho! How are you today?
I'm good. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. I wish I was here or there, because I bet it's a lot warmer there than here.
What was your waking temperature this morning?
It was 36. Yeah.
Ouch.
No words. I know. In fact, and this is a source of great embarrassment for me, I just turned on the heat in my office for the first time all year.
Now, is that because you're a cheapskate, because you like to be cold, or because your house really holds the heat well?
Because I'm a cheapskate, and oil's really expensive. It's because I'm a cheapskate. I guess to be considered a true Yankee, you have to partially like being cold, and then you have to partially be a cheapskate, and then you kind of just have to be stubborn.
Right.
One out of the three. I'm just cold.
So that short answer is you're a Yankee. People who are familiar with Yanks, that's all they need to know. That's what causes my problem, because Glenn, he should have been born in the South. His family lived in the Northeast. His ancestors lived in the Northeast. But he's, you know, it gets down to 64 and a half, and he's turning the heat on.
Yeah.
And I'm resisting. It's like, no, I can't see my breath. We're good.
Well, are you a cold weather soul? Or
I don't mind cold weather in the least.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to complain about the lovely warm weather here. and it's getting a lot harder to deal with as I get older. But, you know, when I was up north for most of my life, I didn't really mind the cold weather. I minded the chores in the cold weather.
Yeah. Yep.
But not really the weather in and of itself. Some people, just plain cold, it sucks. Doesn't even matter if you never have to go outdoors. If it's cold, it sucks.
And dark. That's the other thing. There's just a lot less time outdoors. And it's funny because, you know, I always think about what are people supposed to do? We don't have fur. We have a little bit of hair, you know, like if we didn't have houses and heat and all this stuff, what kind of environment would we really live in? And we would be outside. I mean, we're naked pretty much, you know, we're not woolly like bears.
I think that's a question for people with degrees and lots of letters back next to their name.
No. We hacks on Horses in the Morning can talk about this because it's going somewhere, Jen. You should know me well enough by now. This is going someplace that's going to be good for both of us, like the Caribbean in April or something. No, seriously, it's, you know, it's being stuck inside this box. I think we're designed, we're meant to live outdoors in the sunlight. And then when we're stuck inside, it's dark and cold. And we, you know, we have to break ice out of water buckets and stuff. It's just miserable. So that means we need to move our operations more towards the equator. Just saying.
Which we have done with a small amount of success, and I'm also pleased that we have. Coming up on today's show, I wanted to chat a little bit about what we got coming up here because it's going to be lots and lots of fun. cold weather means clipping horses because, after all, they have wonderful fur, effectively keeps them warm regardless of the weather. And what do we humans do? We insist on shaving it all back off again.
Yes, we do.
And some of us more successfully than others. I'm curious to hear what our clipping gal has to say. Dana Boyd from Andis Clippers is going to be here, and we're going to talk about things you should and shouldn't do when you clip and how to recognize when you're a train wreck waiting to happen today.
That would be me. I fall in the others category. I'm good for like the first 8 inches of a clip, and then I'm all done. That's a big mess.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I found a breed I've never heard of before, so we're going to do a breed highlight today. The Swiss, it's either Freiburger or Freiburger, we're not sure which, is going to be our highlight today. And we're going to have Nicole Ulrich come on and tell us all about Freiburgers. I went to a website this morning to do a little bit of background on the Swiss Freiburger, Freiburger, and they had some great pictures of their annual, I don't know what they call it because it was in a foreign language, but their annual big show. And they do some really fun and interesting stuff. I posted one of them on the Facebook this morning of they have lots of races, and the horses are either ridden or hitched to vehicles in all sorts of forms for these different races. And it was a farm wagon race. Now, it was a modern farm wagon. It had truck tires on it, you know, it was a modern farm wagon. And it had the back seat of maybe a Dodge minivan attached to the top.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. With half a dozen or so young people clinging to it. And it was all decked out with beautiful flowers and pumpkins. It was really cool. And I looked at the picture and said, oh, that could have been taken in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And then I looked a little closer and said, oh, no, this is definitely not taken in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, because they were all wearing Charles Owens helmets.
Oh. Now, that's an interesting combination. Truck tires, wagon, decorated to the hilt, and Charles Owens helmet. Where could that be? What part of the country? It was the United States, though, right?
No, it was in Switzerland.
Oh, it was in Switzerland.
As far as I can tell, like again, the website was in a different language. So as near as I can tell, it was Switzerland, but maybe we'll ask Nicole when she gets here and see if we can't get a little bit more detail on that.
Okay, yeah. I want to know if this group is somewhere in the United States, I want to go visit them.
We need to start importing these horses in a hurry because they're going to fit right in out there.
Exactly.
Hey, it's time for this. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
My Daily Winnie goes out to all of the Facebook fans who shared the clipping graphic that we posted yesterday. It was just a little poster of what you call the different kinds of clips, and we got a lot of shares on that. And shares are our second favorite besides comments. It's fun when people hit the like button, but shares are even better because then your friends get to find out about us too. So thank you very much to all of our fans who shared that. And a special mention goes to Robin because she not only liked it and shared it, she commented and called Glenn out on his My Little Pony again. Did you hear about the My Little Pony event?
No, I've been under a rock lately. What happened with My Little Pony? Oh, no. Do I want to know?
No, this is hilarious.
Okay.
As you know, on Horses in the Morning, little baby Lucas is a My Little Pony fan at an early age.
Awesome.
And that's Jamie's son, little Lucas. And we talk about bronies a lot. So the topic of My Little Ponies comes up pretty frequently on the show. And Glenn was having a good chuckle over that the other day, much to the demise or putting down those bronies and those My Little Pony people. And one, if not several, of our listeners on our Facebook page pointed out that Glenn when he refers to P.T. Scooter, his hackney pony, he refers to him as my little pony.
Oh.
And he didn't even know he was doing it. It was just completely, it's like, oh, crap, I do. Yeah. So
he
what
does.
I'm going to do is, yeah, Glenn's not listening right now. I know that because he's editing some show in his studio right now. I'm going to make up some bumper music for P.T. Scooter stories. So whenever he talks about P.T. Scooter, I can press this button, and I'm going to put it in the sound file section on our studio switchboard under some code name. So he doesn't know what it is.
I'm thinking something like Adam Family like.
No, I'm going to use the music from My Little Pony.
Oh, come on. P.T. Scooter? No, he's Adam's Family. There's got to, you know what? Maybe we can come up with some toy that's a mix of the Adam's Family and My Little Pony. And then P.T. Scooter could be the spokespony for it.
Well, listeners out there, Robin amongst them, because she's always willing to give us her opinion, if you have suggestions on the top secret bumper music for P.T. Scooter stories, please let me know. Post them on Facebook, and I will put something together. So hopefully next week we'll have some crazy bumper music because I love to make bumper music. But there we go. So that's my daily Winnie.
And my daily Winnie is just a little announcement about an organization that's been around for a long time, but that has a new name. The old name was the Delta Society. And they are now called Pet Partners. They've been around for a long time, as I said. They're a nonprofit organization that brings people together who want to put animals to work for the benefit of their fellow human beings. It's really about it's something that a lot of us horse people know, and most horse people are also animal people, and we're all a little bit crazy, but always well-intentioned. And so the Delta Society has done a great job of not just putting horses, putting animals to work and pets to work in therapy situations, but in educating the general public and doing a lot of research as to how the human-animal interaction can really improve the physical, emotional, and psychological lives of both human and non-human. So the Delta Society is now Pet Partners. Their tagline is touching lives, improving health, and I have been a big fan for a long time. So make sure you give them a check out at petpartners.org.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they've got a lot of good research behind their, well, it's just, to us, it's common knowledge, you know. You put your hand on a puppy's head, it's all soft, it makes you feel better, your heart rate slows down, your stress disappears. These are things that we just know instinctively, and the Delta Society, or Pet Partners, has done a really good job of, I don't want to say making it scientific, but sophisticating
the
message.
Well, there are certain circumstances where that scientific research furthers the cause, in that, you know, there are so many things in our universe that, like you said, are common knowledge. But until somebody does some kind of a fancy scientific study, there are some people that say, no, it's not.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And they don't
get,
so
get why
scientific.
They do that. Yeah.
It's not so scientific that the philosophy is unapproachable. You know, it's very compassionate. It's very warm. Everybody can understand what it means to have therapy animals, but it's also not full of drama and emotion. You know, it's a very balanced message. So I think they get a lot of respect from both sides of the coin.
So do they help people get therapy animals? Do they just do research so that therapy animals can be used more effectively? Am I asking too many questions?
No, you're not asking too many questions. They have it's an incredibly resourceful organization. They will help you. They have programs that will help you find animals that are appropriate for therapy programs. They offer training programs for therapy pets. So if you have this like really great dog that you think would be a good therapy dog, you can get in touch with petpartners.org and they will get you involved in a training program. They have scholarships. They have all kinds of support programs for young kids, student projects. Oh, God, the list just goes on and on. An incredibly resourceful organization.
Isn't that cool? It's kind of a great starting point because it's easy to find. Is it petpartners.com? How do you find them online?
Petpartners.org. You can Google, and if you Google Delta Society, which was their previous name, you'll get lots of links for that as well. They have online courses. It's a legitimate nonprofit organization. Like I said, they've been around for years and years, and they're just a really. I'm a huge fan and have been for. I mean, it's 1970. What are we in 2013? So 44
well,
years.
That's not just a Daily Winnie. They get this too. Well, I think I see here on the switchboard that we have our first guest on the line. And why don't you introduce everybody to Dana while I press a button?
Okay. We're going to welcome Dana Boyd Miller. She is going to talk to us about body clipping mistakes. Dana is something of an expert in this field. She works with one of our favorite clipper companies, Andis. And I got that right, didn't I, Andis?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and I never know what, Jen's got me all mixed up with this Freiburger, Freeburger, all these names.
I think Andis is pronounced the American way. Is that it?
Andis, Andis, I have a 10-year-old, so always talking about long A sounds and short A sounds. So it's Andis. So welcome, Dana, to Horses in the Morning. We're happy to have you.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
All right, Jen, you're the clipper queen. I get 6 inches and I'm done. So, what do I do? I leave my horse fuzzy.
So do you a lot of Brody?
This is my second winter with him, and I don't even blanket him. I want him to get warm and fuzzy because he lives outside pretty much 24/7. He's got a run-in situation, and he doesn't work hard enough in the winter to require a serious clipping. That said, there are.
Okay.
A million other people whose horses do work hard over the winter and whose horses do get fuzzy. And these are the people that I think should be paying attention. What do we do? Somebody help me here.
Okay. Regardless.
Go ahead, Dana. Go for it. Enlighten us.
Regardless if you have a show horse or if you have a pleasure horse, what you want to pay attention to is the kind of work that he's doing. If your horse is overheating and can't cool out properly, there may be a minimal pattern to take off that would be similar to you leaving your jacket on but unzipping it. That way you could cool out. And then, of course, you go from the minimal clips, which would be like a strip clip, which would take the hair off of the front of the throat, the chest, and the belly, all the way up to a full clip, which is what you usually see your show horses in.
So what do you think it is, Dana? Folks who do not clip their horses and probably should. What do you think is the most common reason somebody would say, my horse really does need clipped and I'm not going to do it? What is it that stops us?
A lot of people just don't understand that if their horse can't cool out, it's like their body is on slow bake and they're losing conditioning. Here we're pumping all this money into feeding them and trying to get them to gain weight, and if they can't cool out, it's a double-edged sword. They're always kind of at work, if you will. So part of the reason I clip mainly is for health reasons. I'm down in South Florida, and they grow their hair from the lack of daylight, not so much that it's cold, because we're still catching 85, 90 degrees, and they're still growing full coats. Like I said, it's from the lack of daylight.
So, with that note, you're in South Florida. We're in Central Florida. Could you stop by? We have a little 12-hand hackney that has a hair like a grizzly bear. Could you take that off for us?
Hey, no problem. I'll be right up there in about 30 minutes, right?
There we go. He really does like have hair like a grizzly bear, and about two weeks ago, it was an especially warm day, and he was outside all day long because the weather is lovely, and he could not resist. He had to spend the entire day standing in the sunshine eating grass. He has many, many beautiful, lovely live oak trees in his pasture that he could stand under and seek some shade, but he chose not to. And he actually got himself overheated. We had to bring him in and hose him. The poor thing was distressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that in South Florida, but folks who live up north like Helena does and ride their horses, how can we recognize when our horse has a full hair coat and we ride in the wintertime? What are some signs that we would see in our horse that would indicate, you know, this horse should probably be clipped. Should we watch for horses that sweat a lot when we ride, or should we clip a horse who takes forever to get dried off? What are some things that we need to look for?
Well, like you just mentioned, the heavy sweating, and if they're taking a long time to cool out and dry off, the dry-off part's just as important as the cooling out, because if they're wet, they take a chance of tying up and getting muscle cramps or catching a cold. And it's kind of the conditioning part. Depending on where you live, like if you're really up north, just like I said earlier, taking off a little bit of the hair, like with a strip clip, to help him cool out, you would notice if you just took off a little hair and it helped him cool out, then that might be all you need to take off. There are different patterns, whether they be trace clips, high trace clips, or blanket clips, depending on the kind of work that you're doing. But yes, if you're in a climate that is cold, I'm not a big fan of taking off the hair unless you absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm. And that does happen. I mean, a lot of horses stay in work over the winter here. You know, we all have indoors, and we've got competitive horses and even hunt horses, which is probably where I see the most clipping mm-hmm. taking place up here, because a lot of folks hunt right through, you know, December. And then even in the mid-Atlantic states, they're going in through January, February, March. So how do you know what type of clip?
Well, the hunt pattern, if you notice, there we have a couple of charts. If you go to the website at Andes, and there's a chart with six different clipping patterns. The hunt pattern, when you look at it, you'll notice that the legs are left on and that the body, the primary body, has been clipped off. The legs are left on for protection. The strip clip, which is the minimal one, it's just a little bit of hair in the front of the throat and the chest and across the belly. The belly primarily because of the mud that gets flipped up onto their stomachs, it helps with the scald. And really, if you're not doing a lot of work, you kind of want to gear it to the type of work you're doing. If you go out and work your horse for a couple of hours, or you go out and ride for a couple of hours, you may consider a blanket clip. The thing about the blanket clip is that after you've done some heavy work, whether like you're out on a trail ride and you've gone for a nice long gallop and now you're in that walking stage, by leaving the blanket clip on, you're retaining some of the body heat so that they don't tie up so easily or catch a chill. So really, you'd kind of have to gear it towards your work pattern.
I'm looking at
She's looking at the pictures. You look at the pictures, Alina.
Okay.
So you make that decision to clip your horse, and you've thought it through carefully, and then you've gone over to Andes.com and looked at the pictures. What are the – give me some of the common examples of amateurs like us, the mistakes we make to make clipping either unpleasant or unsuccessful, some of the common things that you come across.
Well, none of this is meant with any kind of sarcasm. Some of it's going to sound so simple, you're going to go, really? But one of the main things...
Oh, we love that here. We say that word every week here, every week.
Well, one of the first things is read through the manual that comes with them. There might be some tips about oiling or how to use your equipment or what not to do with it. Like, for instance, if it's a battery-operated situation, by leaving the battery in the charger after it's charged, you know, it might not be a good idea. Some of the machines that we have, if they're the smaller ones, you oil only the blade. If they're the larger ones, you would oil up into the head of the machine as well. So by reading through the manual, you'll get an idea of what you should and shouldn't do. The second most important thing, and that people don't really pay attention to, is get your horse clean. And it's not always a bath. I like to use my long mane comb, like my long nylon mane comb. I'll use that as a curry comb because I find that my curry comb doesn't get deep enough into the hair. And what I'm loosening up as well as the dirt is the buildup skin cells and things. You know how like when you rub your horse, you get that caked up stuff on your hands?
Yeah.
That's
not
all dirt. That's some stuff called sebum. And sebum is a combination of skin cells and oil. And if you don't get that loose and you do give it a bath and don't get that stuff out, it kind of turns to concrete. So a lot of people say that their blades aren't working properly when, in fact, they don't have their horse clean. So
you know, use a mane and tail brush for currying as well when I want to get down to that layer of skin. It's like this layer that
mm-hmm.
sits – you're right. It's like concrete. It sits at the base of the hair
mm-hmm.
on top of
I
the skin.
I feel so much better. That every – other people use – see, that was my top secret thing. I never mentioned that I used a hairbrush on my horse for a curry because I was a little embarrassed. But now a professional does it, and my best friend does it too. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
We're clean freaks, man.
And the reason I'm a fan of that nylon mane comb is they cost like a dollar. So if they walk out of your tack box, it's not a huge investment. And I use that mane comb. If I could only have three things in my grooming box, I would have a hoof pick, a nylon mane comb, and a rub rag, because I can do just about everything I need to with those three things.
Ooh,
but anyway.
Radical thinking, and you heard it first here on Horses in the Morning.
I love that. I love a woman who likes to simplify her tool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so used to things walking away. You have to go, okay, it was here a minute ago. Okay, I still have the inexpensive stuff. It hasn't left. So, but anyway, having your horse clean. The other thing, being in a hurry, our body reaction and our response transfers to our horse, and we don't often think of that. They're very telegraphic and very telepathic. And what I mean is that they read from us and feed to us. It's just that we don't understand that. So if, for instance, when I have a horse that's being nervous or antsy, I'll step away, take a few deep breaths, switch to the slow speed because it makes myself slow down working, and I'll move a lot slower. Now, I'm not saying guarded. I'm not being like, ooh, easy, whoa, not that way, but I mean just slow down. A lot of people get in a big hurry, and the horse will look at them like, okay, why are they being in such a hurry? Should I be nervous? So our reactions transfer through to them.
Well, that actually brings up the timing of, you know, how long it takes to do one of these clips. You do need to plan ahead so that you don't rush. You're not anxious. So you need to really know exactly what kind of clip you're going to do, have your clippers ready, have your horse in a safe and comfortable place. So there's a fair amount of organization that needs to go into this before you do it.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. That would be...
Do you clip professionally? I'm right there?
Yes, ma'am.
You're there. Do you see a lot? Do you do mostly the show horses, or do you have a wide variety of competition and, let's say, fox hunting, because they're not technically competition horses? Is that pretty much where your life is at right now?
I work on primarily show horses, but at that same time, a lot of the show horse people have hunters, they have pleasure horses, they have reining horses. So it's, you know, anything really that's growing hair and needs to be clipped, I'm not too proud to say, yes, I will be glad to help you out there. And it doesn't have to be a show horse.
Doesn't have to be show. Do horses that compete in the Western disciplines ever use anything but a body clip? Do you see trace clips and that sort of, or blanket clips on horses that are in Western disciplines?
Not so much. And I often see horses that I wish they would consider clipping. A lot of people get hung up on the color, because obviously when they have their winter coat, the top color is darker than the undercolor. But I wish they would kind of take more of a look at their horse and realize, okay, the color is really pretty. But that would be the equivalent of me telling you, keep that mink coat on. It's a beautiful coat. It's 90 degrees out, but the coat is beautiful. Don't take that off. You know? So some of it is, you know, some of it's definitely health related.
At least. So we're talking about things that people do inappropriately or wrong when they clip horses. Whenever I clip a horse, I've clipped lots and lots and lots of horses, and I still suck at it, I will admit. And I've had the same problem from day one.
And that
I
would
get
be...
those lines that everywhere the clippers went, the lines.
Okay.
Why do I get those lines?
Well, it could be a couple of things. First of all, let the clipper do the work instead of trying to push the machine through the hair. Make sure your blades are sharp. But also, hair is a lot like water. And what I mean by that is we've all been on a bridge and you see the water's going in a certain direction. But have you ever noticed you can see current in the water where it, like, changes
swirly.
A little bit of direction?
Swirly, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you look at the hair on the body, it kind of looks like it's all going one direction. But then if you pay attention, particularly where the body parts are joining together or where it's a rounded area, that hair changes direction also. So you'd hear me say, change the angle that you're clipping at. And I don't mean by lifting the back end of the machine up or down. I mean by swinging it from side to side. So come at the hair at like a 45-degree angle, and it doesn't matter if you're going to it or away from the angle, but change the angle that you're clipping on. Does that make sense to you?
Okay. I think
yes.
so. Let me see if I'm
yes,
getting
yes,
this
yes.
right.
You're changing the angle of the blade, so you're tilting the clipper either up, down, left, right.
Not so much up and down, but from side to side. If you clip, if you
right.
move, when I said don't lift the back end of the machine up or down, if you lift the back end of the machine up, you'll have a tendency to put the teeth of the blade on the skin. You want to keep
right.
that blade flat. And likewise, if you lower the back end of the machine, you're going to lift the teeth off of the body, and it won't clip the hair the length the blade's designed for. However,
then you get
if you
speed
take,
bump in
exactly.
the hair.
Yeah, that's what I get.
Exactly.
I get, yeah. Mine look like Godzilla. So that brings us to another question.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the angle of the clipper. What kind of stroke, then, should you use? Because, like, my problem is the jagged edge. So there's not only do we get the line, but the line is jagged from left to right.
Okay. Are you doing a full body clip, or are you trying to do a pattern?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I guess if you would say, not a full body clip, it would be a pattern.
Okay.
So let's say, like, a trace.
When you're starting your clip, this is another thing people don't often remember to do. Do you mark the pattern before you try to clip it, or are you trying to freehand it?
I want to say I mark the pattern, but I don't.
Okay.
I freehand it.
Yeah. Hey, it's nice. At least you're honest. Try using a bar of soap and get it a little bit of damp on the end of it. And mark the pattern with that bar of soap. What's going to happen is your pattern, first of all, will turn out even instead of going from side to side and watching it creep up the sides. And also you'll have a straight line of where you're trying to clip. So in the effort of trying to keep the lines from being jagged, take a shorter stroke. I usually use like a 6 to 8 inch overlapping stroke, kind of like, do you mow your own yard or do you have yard service?
No, I mow my own yard.
Me too. Me too. You know how, like, when you mow the yard, you take that overlapping stroke with a lawnmower?
Yes.
Try the
yes.
same thing.
You don't get skippers. Yes.
Try overlapping by maybe a quarter of the width of your blade.
Okay.
Not a whole lot, just a little bit.
I have a feeling that marking it with this, I love the bar of soap idea. But
mm-hmm.
I think like anything, like they tell you when you're trying to freehand a straight line, you kind of have to look, you know, 2 to 3 strokes or a couple of inches in front of where you're going. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's probably true for this too. And then, so you're saying this line and marking it actually helps steady the hand and steady the stroke.
Yes, and it gives you an idea where you're going instead of, like, trying to freehand. And where I find every once in a while I'll not have a bar of soap with me, and I'm like, I'll just do this. And what happens is it comes up on an angle. So it helps me draw that line where it's straight in the first place and I'm not coming back touching it up.
Okay, I have one last question because we're sucking up Dana's entire morning here, and she probably
no. You're fine. Go ahead.
Whenever are you, especially when you're doing a pattern on a horse, whether it's just a little skinny strip or a blanket clip, when you have to make that line between the clipped part and the not clipped part, when that line runs parallel or nearly parallel to the hair growth, it's not
mm-hmm.
so bad to do. But whenever that line is at an odd angle to the hair growth, or even worse, perpendicular to the hair growth, how do you get the line to work right? Because they come out crappy every time for me. Because as you can see, I'm just crappy at this, and I need help.
Well, remember, it's like riding a bike. You'll get better, and it's hair. It grows back, so don't worry.
yeah, but in the meantime, I can't go out in public.
Well, your horse shouldn't go out in public, but you may still be
yeah,
able
there we
to.
Go.
It could depend on the body positioning. Are you talking like up on the throat and neck area? Where are you talking about specifically? Because on the barrel, that would be straight. That like the barrel where you're running the straight
right,
line,
the barrel,
that should be
the barrel
pretty.
Barrel kind of runs parallel, but like if you're doing a trace clip and you do that little up sweep where their
the tie-in.
Stifle and flank are, that's one of them. And again, up near their throat latch, you have that problem too.
Okay. With the throat latch? If you have a holder to help you raise the head, lift the head up. But if you don't have a holder, lift it with your empty hand and position him so that his head is up and not down. When their heads are down and stretched out, it's not a true position. So by raising them, you're going to lift and stretch the skin naturally, and you're going to put a little bit more muscle tone in there so you can work through that area easier. On the tie-in, what I refer to the tie-in, where the barrel joins the hind flank, if you look at that hair and follow the hair direction, that hair, that's a huge area with a cowlick. And that's
right.
One of those places, remember where we said come at it at a slightly different angle?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those places to, you're going to follow the hair growth pattern into the center. A lot of people want to come down through that area and just clip right straight down, and they press
yeah,
too hard.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Okay, well, what you end up having is there's that concave place, so it's, like, hollow there, and you have to push harder on the clipper to get it to make contact. That's how people end up with scoring or the gouges in their coat, which are different than lines. Lines can be taken out, but the gouges are usually from people pressing too hard, and they get a lot of contact on the outside teeth of the blade. So by following the hair pattern, and with that hind leg, step the hind leg back, and it'll tighten up that loose skin area so that it makes
wow.
it a little easier to work through.
So
and when I'm getting, you know how at the very bottom of the tie-in, that skin's really thin and really kind of scary to work through?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's almost like their ears. It's a very thin ridge. I'll take my empty hand and put it behind the skin so it's kind of on the inside of the horse's body where you can't really see it, and I'll take my thumb and roll the skin so that it becomes flat instead of a skinny little edge, because you will take and it will go through the teeth of the blades if it's very thin.
Ooh.
And that's what you don't
oh, yeah.
do.
I've done that before.
Yep.
Yeah.
Take your hand.
That,
like
that put an end to my clipping career.
Oh, and you feel horrible, and a horse looks at
oh.
you, and if they had fingers, you know what they'd do with their middle one to you.
Oh.
Thank goodness they only have hooves, you know.
I know. Well, yeah, this is where I've learned to understand that horses can roll their eyes at you. And
oh, yeah.
They don't even need fingers to get that sentiment across.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, obviously, you do this professionally. You're full of tips and knowledge about this. Where can people find out more about these tips? I know Andis could be a good resource.
That would be the primary one I would go to right now. Go to andis.com, and in the large animal section, they have a couple of Ask the Experts. One is, well, the expert number three would be me. And then we have a gentleman with cattle also, and I think he's number four. I'm not sure which one Kirk is, but if you have cattle questions, we have a cattle expert also. You can submit any of your questions there, and I'll be glad to get back in touch to you.
Excellent.
And we also have a couple of, there are two DVDs that are out with different tips. What they originally, and the way I got associated with the company, was I have tendonitis, and I was a fan of the large machines, but I could no longer hold them. My parents do repairs and sharpening, and they contacted the company, or they actually told me about the small machine, and kind of like everybody did, I looked at my dad, and I'm like, they're so small, they're not going to last. And I have to tell you, I'm an only child. My dad bellered at me in a voice, and he yelled at me to just humor him and try them. I've been using them since 1997. So the company didn't realize they had an equine market back then, and we were ordering 50 to 60 sets of clippers a week. And people would see me at the horse shows clipping, and then they'd see that it was the small machine, and they had to have a set. So the company asked, you know, what are you doing? Was it dogs or Beauty and Barber? And my mom said, no, we're clipping horses. And they said, clips what? And they asked, could they come watch? And would I do a DVD or a at the time it was still video, for somebody who had never clipped their horse to be able to watch the video and then go work on their horse. And I've had a lot of compliments on it and the fact that it actually is for people and they have gotten tips out of it. So there are two at the company as well. If that would help anybody, they are available.
This is great. Well, thank you very much for coming on Horses in the Morning and setting us straight on clipping. This is Dana Boyd Miller, and you are with Andis, and we
yes, ma'am.
Greatly appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks a lot for
Thanks,
having
Dana.
Me. I've enjoyed it.
Talk to you again sometime.
All right. Have a great day, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I think I could have used up Dana's whole day.
I know. I know.
Hey, it's time for us to hear from one of our sponsors. And then it's going to be soon time to get hold of Nicole Ulrich, who's going to be here talking about Freiburger Freiburger horses. So we'll be right back, folks.
Freiburger Freiburger.
Hi, Glenn the Geek here, and I'm with Debbie from Equestrian Collections, and we're here this week to talk about chat.
Yes, we are always so happy to hear from our customers, and we have a feature on our website called Live Chat. If you click on any product, you'll see an orange button that says Live Chat. Just click on that, and one of our friendly customer service reps will be at the end of the line, and you can chat. It's just like talking with your fingers back and forth to us. You can always call us, of course, at toll-free 877-872-4415. We're here from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time. But if for some reason you're on your computer and you don't necessarily want to...
Yes, at work.
And you don't want to be talking on the phone, you can just live chat with us, and we'll be happy to help you there. We try and be here for our customers anytime and any way they want. You can also email us at customerservice@equestriancollections.com. We always respond to those within 24 hours of business days of getting those emails, and usually it's much quicker than that. So
now,
please come chat with us.
Now, years ago when the live chat first came out for websites like this, not many people use it. Has it become more and more popular now?
Yes, absolutely. And we talk to people all the time, and of course when it gets to be the holiday time, we're chatting and talking at the same time.
Yep.
Talking on the phone and talking with our fingers at the same time. So it is very convenient for our customers, and we always answer very quickly. If there's any problem, if you don't hear back from us immediately, then there's something wrong with the connection. So click out and click back in again, because we are there as long as it's 9 to 5 Eastern Time.
And what's nice is you'll find a live chat button on any of the product pages just over there on the right. So just click
that. We look forward to chatting with you soon. Thank you.
That's equestriancollections.com.
Helena B. here, and I'm on Horses in the Morning live, and apparently I'm told that I need to talk to myself for a while, which is really not a problem, but it's kind of strange when you know that there's a couple thousand people who are listening along with you. So I decided that I was going to talk a little bit about a cool little contest that's going on with one of the other shows on the Horse Radio Network. For those of you who know me, I'm also the co-host of the Stable Scoop Radio Show, and the newest show, or one of the newest shows on the Horse Radio Network, which is called Chasing a Fox in a Little Black Dress. And that one is geared toward fox hunters and their friends. It's a lot of fun. Our greatest presence also is on, aside from the Horse Radio Network, is on Facebook. So head on over to Chasing a Fox in a Little Black Dress on Facebook and check out our contest. We have a great giveaway from Deej and Skinner. That's Chasing a Fox in a Little Black Dress. And coming up next, we have another guest, Nicole Ulrich, and she's going to talk to us about this breed that Jennifer's never heard of, which is a stretch. It's called the Swiss Freiburger, or Freiburger. What do we think? Freiburger, Freiburger?
Let's ask Nicole.
Okay.
It's Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. What's the verdict? The breed is called the Swiss what?
They're called a Freiburger.
Freiburger. That sounds yummy.
Yes, it sounds like burger and fries.
So tell us a little bit about what is this horse? Where does it come from? What does it do? What makes it awesome? Because apparently you are an enthusiast. You love the breed. Tell us a little bit about where it came from.
The Freiburger is actually the national breed of Switzerland, and that's where I'm from. They're a heavy warm blood or a light draft, however you want to put it. They measure between about 14.3 and 15.3 hands, and they're around 1,300 pounds. And they're used for pretty much anything you can think of. They come in bay, brown, and chestnut colors, and there's also a few flax and manes, but other than that, there's not that many colors out there.
They're a nice looking, I'm actually on the SwissFreiburger.com website, and they're a hardy looking breed. They almost have that I almost want to say like quarter horse body type, sort of roundish. Am I overstating their body type or?
Yes, that's basically what they are, except that they are heavier bones than the quarter horse. They got bigger feet in average. And they also have that drafty-looking proud neck on them. Yeah. But they are a very short, coupled, round horse, and very muscular, too.
I can see the bone, and there's a picture of a lovely bay on the horses for sale section of the website, and I can see that nice bone that you're talking about. Looks like they might make good field hunters, just saying.
Good what?
Field hunters.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you can use them for pretty much anything. Like they, I see people doing dressage, jumping, driving, western riding. They're used as trail horses, mountain horses. They're even packed. And they're also still today a workhorse, like in the field and for logging. And some people even use them for therapy work. So they're pretty versatile.
And how long do you have a Freiburger? Do you own one?
Yes, I own two. I own a mare, 7 years old, and I own a gelding at 4.
And what do you do with your horses?
I do western riding, but I also like to do dressage work in the western saddle, and I find them very suitable for that. My mare I use for pretty much anything. If I get invited to ride somewhere and I'm not really familiar of what I'm getting into, I bring my Freiburger just to make sure I can do whatever they ask me to do.
So you trust your horse, you trust the breed that much that in a pinch, you know, you can always lean back on, or you can always count on your Freiburger.
Yes, I can totally count on my mare. She's the most reliable horse I have. And even though she's quite young still, I can totally count on her. She's never left me hanging.
That's a good thing, because she's a big horse.
Beefy. Go ahead, Jen.
Go ahead. Well, you're in Canada, Nicole, and
yes.
You don't sound real Canadian, eh?
No, I'm Swiss.
You're Swiss. So you knew about the horses growing up, so you were familiar with the breed then?
Yes. I didn't get to have horses when I was growing up because in Switzerland it's very expensive to have a horse, so it's not like in North America where kids have their own horse. But I rode a lot of horses when I was young, and there were also a lot of Freiburgers. Actually, the first horse I ever had a lesson on was a Freiburger. And I got to see lots, and it's just a very old tradition in Switzerland to use Freiburgers and to work with them. And you know, you see them pulling a cart everywhere, and they're just part of the history there.
So growing up, Freiburgers were everywhere, kind of like in America, quarter horses are everywhere.
Yes,
When you came to Canada, were there Swiss Freiburger horses in Canada, or did you have to import them?
No, I actually brought my filly with me. That was 5 years ago, so she was only a two-year-old back then. And I ended up with a brood mare that came from eastern Canada, and she was bred to a Freiburger over there. And so she had the first foal born in B.C. And that's my young gelding now. And we ended up selling the mare to a home in southern B.C., and we still have the gelding. We raise him, and he's doing really well on the saddle now.
So he's a relative youngster yet. Now, is there a breeding population
now
in Canada yet, or is it still a case of there being pretty much just imported?
There is somebody breeding in eastern Canada, Nova Scotia, I believe. And they brought a whole bunch of horses about 2 years ago. And other than that, I think there's very few horses Freiburger horses in Canada. There's, I think, a few in Alberta, but they were imported, and as far as I know, there's nobody breeding them yet.
Hmm. Are there, does the breed have any health issues that are, you know, genetic variations or, you know, anything that, that you have to pay close attention to because they are a pedigree, a breed?
No, there are little to no health issues, and that's because breeding stock always goes through inspection, and horses with genetic diseases are just eliminated. And inbreeding or line breeding is not even an option for them, and that generally keeps the breed very healthy. There's, as far as it comes to genetic variations, there's some dominant white horses and some overos, but they are undesirable for the breed standard.
And where can people go to find out more about the breed standards, registering, you know, the goals and parameters for a registry?
There's actually not much out there in the English language. I think my website is pretty much the only one that's in English, and it's swissfreiburger.com. But there's a really good website from the Swiss Registry, and it's called freiburger.ch. And if you have a good way to translate from German or French to English, then, yeah, it's worth the research.
Now, there is there's a special event that's been around for over 100 years. It's called the Marché Concours. Tell us about that and how the Freiburgers fit into that.
It's a huge event in the province called Jura, and that's basically where they originated. And it's the highlands of Switzerland, so it's not the actual mountains, but it's a nice remote area. And the Marché Concours is an annual event, and that's where people just basically like to show off their horses. There's just regular riding events there, but there's also things like a farmer's horse race, they call it. So people ride their Freiburger horses bareback and they race them down the track. So it's quite hilarious to watch.
I think I might be falling a little bit in love with this breed, especially since they come from Switzerland. I'm a fan of all things Swiss. I mean, there really isn't anything bad about Switzerland. Between the, honestly, the people and the food, your chocolate and your horses and your watches, you guys really get some great stuff. Where can people go to find out? Well, are there horses for sale? Are there Freiburgers for sale? Where can people find out more about that?
It's going to be hard to find Freiburgers for sale in North America. I mean, I have my one gelding for sale, but that's not really a lot to choose from. If somebody's really into it, I would suggest to look at breeder websites in Switzerland. And there's actually one that promotes a lot of horses. It's called freibergeremmental.ch. And there's a lot of horses for sale on there, so people get a better idea of what's out there and what's available. Yeah, like I said, I don't know if anybody's selling them here right now, so having them imported would probably be a good option.
Okay. And, of course, people can find out some great information at your website, which is SwissFryBurger.com.
Yes.
And, well, I, for one, am a fan. I'm going to be Googling the breed and probably getting in touch with you just to learn a little bit more than we learned here today. We really appreciate you coming on. Obviously, you love the breed. We're very happy that you brought it to North America. So if some of us can't get to Switzerland to check out the breed, Canada's not such a stretch. So thank you very much to Nicole Ulrich. Thank you again for joining us today. And we encourage everyone to check out your website.
Yeah, that's great. It was great talking to you.
All right, take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. I do this every time. Like, we did a show on Cleveland Bays, we did a show on Morgan horses, we do a show on Arabians. I fall in love with the breed every time, and it's probably because the people who are on the show to talk about the breed love them so much. But these, actually, I like the versatility, the heavy bone, but the smaller size, the kind of laid-back, mellow disposition. Sounds like a nice horse for me, for most people, actually. So, again, we thank Nicole for bringing us more information about the Swiss Freiburger. We're going to move the show a little bit along here. Coming up, we have the Daily Song, but we also have a word from our sponsor. We're going to talk about Rider's Sleeves. Those are the super stretchy antimicrobial sleeve that you can wear for your outdoor activities. The Special Riders Sleeves material keeps you cooler than no sleeves at all. I know this for sure because I put them on my body when we were at the trade show in Philadelphia in August. And you don't have to, you don't have to put on sunblock and attract bugs and dust and all that. So the rider sleeves keep you cool, keep you clean, and keep you from getting sunburned. You can find them online at riderssleeves.com. Next up, we have our daily song.
The cows.
And we are back. You are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. This is October 29th, 2013, episode 776. Coach Jen is here with us, and I am Helena B., usually with the Stable Scoop Radio Show and Chasing a Fox, but I'm filling in for Glenn on Horses in the Morning today. And this is the most anxiety-provoking job I've ever had in my life. I swear to God, it's so hard.
Yeah, I had to do the show with Jamie yesterday, who poor Jamie had to do an hour and a half's worth of work all by herself, I think. I do Horse Tip Daily, and Horse Tip Daily is a pre-recorded show. No stress at all for me to do that show. But when I do the live show at the end of 90 minutes, I am all tapped out. I'm done for the day. I'm finished.
Yeah.
I don't know how Jamie and Glenn do this 5 days a week. I really don't.
Well, it's hard. Like, you know, you're talking to somebody, and then there's the delay. So when we tape shows, there's no delay between the back and forth conversation from, I mean, our studios are obviously, we're all spread out all over the country, but this, you have to be aware that there's a delay. You have to have the, there's a word I'm going to use, but I'm not going to use it. You have to have the gumption. You have to have the courage to just sit tight and not say anything and wait for the other person to respond. It's really hard. It's really hard, but it's fun. Because we get to talk about horse stuff, especially me and you.
Yeah. We apologize in advance for having to use the B-team guys, but we need practice too.
This is true. I mean, hey, Tom Brady was once a B-teamer.
There we go. See? A little football reference for you this morning. So to wrap things up today, since we got to the topic of winter horse care when we were talking to Dave Boy Miller about clipping, I thought it would be a lot of fun to go over some really common winter horse keeping screw-ups that people make. And it's always fun to talk about how we screw up because misery loves company.
Yes. And I've got lots of company because I'm always miserable, especially in the winter. All right, so we have this list. Let's see. Jennifer says, ensure your horse stays healthy all season long by using common sense, which is really not so common. I like to call it good sense because it's not common. It's just good sense. So these are the top 10 winter horse keeping mistakes. Jen, start us off.
Well, this is a really common one, letting the horse's water freeze over, and especially for folks in your part of the country.
Yes, but it's difficult to not let the water freeze over unless you plan ahead. And there's all kinds of voodoo and tips and tricks that you can do to your horse's
water. Lots of DIY water for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I had once that somebody put goldfish in their outside water tanks to keep them to keep the water from freezing over. Have you ever heard that one?
That sounds like a recipe for frozen fish.
Yeah, I know.
It can have a beneficial effect on algae, but I've never heard it for frozen.
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting. Fake bookers out there, let us know on that one.
Okay.
There's a 1.1 on this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
There's a 1.1 on letting their water freeze over. This is way, way more common than, quote, letting the water freeze over, because most people, the water freezes over there, you go over there, you know, once if not several times a day, and you bust all the ice out. And then leave the icebergs floating around in the water. Take the icebergs out, people.
I take the icebergs out.
Yeah, take the icebergs out. I feel better now.
I actually keep a hammer. And I have a little bucket right outside the barn door. They're tools for whatever the season is. So in the summertime, it's a strainer. It's actually like a, you know, you know, when you see vegetables and macaroni and stuff like that. And I use it to scoop bugs out of the water tank. In the fall, I use it to scoop leaves and stuff. And in the wintertime, I have a hammer, and I use it for breaking the ice. Sometimes it gets so thick that you break it up, and then you have to actually, you know, take the icebergs out. But then the icebergs are so heavy, and I'm so cold, and I'm usually in my pajamas. There's this, like, my barnyard gets littered with icebergs, and I've created a whole nother hazard.
Ice field.
ice fields. So I don't know, maybe. Depends on what your barnyard is like. You can leave the icebergs in or take the icebergs out. I take them out.
There you go. I take them out, too. Right. Icebergs took out the Titanic, for goodness sake.
My horse is a little like the Titanic in winter, which leads us to the next point. Do not increase feed rations when temperatures dip. Or the opposite. More grain and not more hay. We want to go up with forage. So, I mean, it's true that horses will burn more calories staying warm as well as growing their winter coats. So if you're going to increase anything, increase forage.
There you go. Go right? Hay first, then go to the grain. You got it.
Hay first, then grain. Okay. Number three, no exercise. Guilty. It's too cold to ride.
Well, you know, the no exercise one takes on new meaning when you come across folks who either by choice or by necessity have to keep their horses stalled a lot of the time in the winter. Sometimes there's no other option. But your horse gets turned out a lot in the summer months, and all you see him do is stand still and eat hay or stand still and eat grass. Do not underestimate the value of what appears to be no exercise when they're turned out. He spends 48 hours in a stall, or he spends 3 or 5 days a week in a stall. He's really not getting any exercise. So really be conscious of the fact that your horse isn't getting to move around. And one of the things I learned to do when we lived in Kentucky, and we do it here too, even though the horses are out 24/7, is we do something we call adventure walks, because frequently the weather was just too wretched to ride. It was either too cold, too windy, or most likely too icy underfoot because there was no indoor arena, or the horse was too bonkers to ride. I'm not getting up on top of that thing. He's nuts. But I could take him for a hand walk, and we would walk the horses like dogs. We'd just go out and walk around the outside edge of a cornfield or around the outside empty pasture that really wasn't suitable for riding in, but you could certainly hand walk in it. And that really did a lot for the horse's sanity and my waistline.
You know, my waistline, our waistline, the horse's sanity. I've had, I have my horses at home now, but I haven't boarded at a place with an indoor in quite a long time. And I remember taking Zeke up and down a long driveway when it was like, you know, too cold or too wet or too icy to ride. And we did so much in-hand work just to get the blood moving and the joints moving that it got to the point where I was able to do like little tricks with him at liberty. He could walk right next to me and turn and whoa and back up just at the sound of my voice. And that was simply because we did these little exercises, like you said, walking our horses like we would walk our dogs. And it did a lot for our relationship. I don't mean to anthropomorphize, but the animal-human relationship, I think those little exercise jaunts made a big difference mentally for us both.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'm not a round pen person, nor am I much of a lunger, because I don't compete and don't have a need to do that type of schooling with my horse. So we don't get to spend a lot of ground time together. It's pretty much bring him in from the pasture, tie him to the wall, and tack him up. But you're absolutely correct that human on the ground and horse on the ground part, it really is beneficial, and it will have dividends come springtime, because come springtime, your horse's ability to respect your personal space and understand your body language will be much enhanced.
I'm laughing. Yeah.
Springtime.
Overriding an out of shape horse. That's a tough one, actually.
I'm very sad to say this is all too common in trail riding circles and in fox hunting circles, where the horse is kind of pseudo vacationing. A really gorgeous weekend comes through in the weather channel, and folks hop up on those horses and just ride their legs off. Please have a little bit more respect. Even though he doesn't act like he's exhausted, tired, and or sore, be careful with that. If you are going to ride a horse more than he's used to, at least give him some support and therapy when you're finished. Rub down his legs. Maybe a beaut if he needs it. He's an old guy.
Yeah. I don't want to say maybe I might be guilty of that. My horse does not get worked enough to say that he's an athlete. But we do take advantage of those nicer days. And, you know, you just have to be aware of what you're doing when you're up there. You know, if you want to have a gallop, have a little gallop. If you want to have a trot, you know, make sure you do walk rests in between. So, and then, of course, the post-ride supportive therapies are always welcome. All right, number five, closing the barn up tight as your grandma's Tupperware. Ew, ew, ew. Yeah.
This has got to be the most common one I see, the most common in cold weather climates, is closing all the doors and windows of your barn, trying to keep that heat in. I totally get that. If you're going to do that, at least install a exterior outdoor barn-appropriate fan and set it on low because you need to move the air around. But remember, your horse isn't breathing the air in the aisleway. Your horse is breathing the air inside the stall, and he's breathing the air inside the stall between 2.5 and 3.5 feet above the floor. So if you walk into your horse's stall, get on your knees, and take a nice deep breath and about gag, you're really setting yourself up for problems, not to mention making your horse's living conditions unpleasant. So if you do need to or have to emotionally close up your barn, at least put in a fan to keep the air moving in the stalls. There you go. Off my high horse now.
Okay, very good. Over-blanketing, number six, over-blanketing.
Ooh. Now, Brody gets to be fuzzy all winter long. Does Brody still have the luxury of a turnout blanket or sheet?
Yes and no. If we have wet blizzard conditions, I will throw a waterproof sheet on top of him. Just so he doesn't get drenched, and because when he comes in, obviously it's still cold, so we don't want him drying off with a chill. That's the only time, though. So I don't want to use a blanket on him.
Yeah, and that was an interesting learning curve when we moved down here to Central Florida, because obviously we have very mild winters, and it's actually the dry season so we don't get much rain, but we do occasionally have overnight rains where we'll get an inch or so. And the temperatures are in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and the horses get very cold when that happens because it's a downpour. It's not just a light drizzle that a winter coat could shed off. It's a downpour, and the horses don't get heavy coats down here typically. So I had to readjust my blanketing habits because Beaker, for the most part, is unclipped. But if we're going to have rain overnight, I pretty much, even if it's just, you know, 50% chance, I have to put a sheet on him, or I will come out in the morning to a shivering pony.
And, you know, that's kind of – I think we could probably do a whole show on blanketing because there are different strategies that you have to take for, well, the backyard horse and the horse owner who's on the property 24/7, the horse that's boarded and is on an actual routine where no one's really going to be there to tend to them when the weather does what you don't want it to do. So I think there's a tendency to over-blanket simply because of the timing. You know, not necessarily because you want to over-blanket, but like you said, you have no choice.
Yeah. So, and either way, if you put too much on them or not enough, either way, you're going to be stressing the animal. So, yeah, there's so many judgment calls involved when it comes to putting clothing on your horse. You're right. I'll have to go find somebody who wants to sponsor the blanketing full episode. I'll work on that.
I hear Weatherbeater or Rambo in our future.
Maybe Horseware wants to talk to us. We'll see.
All right, number seven, lack of hoof care. What's up with that, lack of hoof care? Why, because we think we're not riding, that we don't go out there and pick feet and trim feet and pull shoes?
I think that's where we're going with this one. The wintertime, you're not riding a whole lot, so, oh, heck, just let their shoes on for 14 weeks. Yeah. That's probably the most common one that I see. Yeah,
is lack of a care. Well, yeah. Well, you know, there is a group of people who stop riding in the winter. Some of them actually just send their horses down south to be turned out. They pull their shoes and they just kind of let them go. What do you think about that when they're just sort of they're seriously on vacation? Like, you know, even the we talked to the folks who worked with the carriage horses in New York City. They pull their shoes and turn them out in the pasture for a month. Is that a bad thing?
Well, from the hoof care point of the hoof care point of view, pulling their shoes and turning them out, perfectly valid. Now, of course, just like everything else in horses, there's gray areas in there. What really isn't valid is booting them out into the pasture for a vacation and not pulling their shoes. If you're going to boot them out shod, you need to make sure you're keeping after the horseshoes. If they need to come in and get them checked, they need to have them picked out because horseshoes are famous for rocks wedging in there and have them reset on a reasonable schedule. What you have to really be careful of, and again, this is the one I see the most commonly, at least in my little world, is the horses, you know, the riding season is winding down. The horse gets turned out or spends a lot of his time turned out and just kind of comes and goes. Nobody comes to the barn, but maybe on weekends. And the horseshoe hasn't fallen off, and the horse hasn't gone lame, therefore they don't do anything at all with the shoe. If your horse is shod or on a regular shoeing or trimming schedule, that needs to happen year-round, not just in the summer months.
Hmm. Okay. I like that. The other thing is what I notice is, right now my horse is not shod, but he will be soon because he needs to be. But what I found is that his hooves get harder in the winter because there's less moisture in the grass and his mm-hmm. turnout areas. But mm-hmm. they then become more brittle and more prone to cracking and chipping, which can really lead to some serious damage. And the ground gets so hard. Again, I'm up in the Northeast, so the ground gets so hard, and I feel like there is a greater chance for hoof injuries when you're. But on the other hand, I had to learn this myself as a backyard horse owner. You do have to keep up with some kind of trimming and conditioning because like his hoof growth slows down considerably in the winter.
Yeah.
Which may also be why it chips and cracks a lot more. But
yeah.
So you think,
exactly.
Oh, well, you know, their hooves aren't really growing as much as they do in the warmer weather, so I can back off a little bit. And you're saying, absolutely not. Stick with your routine.
Well, yeah, you stick with your routine within reason, but it's the observation part of the routine. Don't stop picking out their feet. Don't stop checking. Don't just send your farrier a Christmas card and say, see you in the springtime.
Right.
There's adjustments to be made, absolutely, but don't just ignore the whole, hello, see you later. No, not good. Because come springtime, you're going to have that horse's feet taken care of for the first time along about April 1st, and you're liable to get some really bad news.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so don't neglect the hoof care. Don't neglect the hooves. Number eight.
Is it hoof or hoof?
No. Oh, I say hoof, but that's me. I don't say rough. I say roof. But I really don't make sense. No beauty treatment. This is my favorite part about winter horse keeping. Beauty treatment.
Spa day. We call it spa day.
Yeah, because, like, it's like too cold or icy to ride, so you're not in a rush to get the saddle out and get in the tack. It's like, I can take my time.
There we go. I must admit, I was not so prone to the wintertime beauty treatment. I would get the mud off, get the riding done, and be finished because my fingers would freeze freaking off when you're brushing the horse. Maybe if you have a really toasty, cozy, warm barn, that's more fun.
Yeah. Or mittens, just good mittens.
Good mittens. There
that's
we go.
Cool. I'll tell you, you know what has helped? You know how we were talking about using the mane and tail brush for currying?
Yeah.
Mine has a long handle, and mm-hmm. that actually helps keep my hands warmer in the wintertime because I can wrap my little fingers and my mittens around the handle and still get my horse a good curry without freezing my fingers off.
Brilliant. Mitten-friendly grooming tools.
Yes, mitten-friendly grooming tools. I feel a product line coming on.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Tune in next week. We'll have it for you.
Tools. All right. Yeah. So keep up with the beauty treatments. It's a great time too. You know what I do too in the winter? It's I don't really like to bathe my horse, obviously. Not many people do in the cold winter months. But it's a good time to wash the tail. So if you do get your hand, because you don't need a whole lot of warm water. You can, you know, heat something up in the house if you don't have warm water in your barn, or you just take a nice bucket. It's a great time to clean the tail, which I get frozen poopsicles in the tail all the time. So, well, I did with my old guy. Brody's a little bit neater. He's a little healthier and younger. But, yeah, yeah, it's a good time to wash the tail. What? What?
Just a little semantics comment. I don't think you have poopsicles in the tail. Brody gets poopsicles in his tail, not you.
Wait a minute. I beg to differ because if I have to touch it, then they're mine. Okay?
There's
if I touch it, I own it. Don't
What's
neglect
number nine? We're almost through.
Okay. Throwing him out to pasture and forgetting about him or her. All right. Yeah. Even at Christmas time, I'm out there in my jammies with some peppermint. Don't forget about your pony.
Yeah. I think this one is sort of the culmination of all the ones above it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you do more than one of the above, then you qualify for this one.
Yeah, I mean, you can forget about them for a couple hours, maybe a day, take a little weekend vacation, you know. But it's true. It's basically summarizing the entire list is just don't forget about them. You don't have to be as intense as you are when you're in full riding season, or even if you're a competitive rider. You can give your horse a little vacation in the winter months, but don't forget about him. Aw, he needs kisses. My horse is a people person. He loves attention. He loves to socialize. So even if we just pop out there, you know, stand on the fence and give him kisses and peppermints, I see that it makes a difference in his personality on the whole and his health. Good mental health.
And
good horsey mental health.
You're part of his herd. He wants to make sure you're good.
Yes, ma'am. And number 10,
if you don't come to visit him for a couple of days, he's not sure if you left him behind because the water trough dried up. He's not sure if the wolves ate you. He doesn't know what's going on. So make sure, you know, reassure him. Stop by and say hi.
Yep. Stop by and say hi. Even if I'm, like, on my way to the dump or the grocery store, I come out the back door and I scream across the field, "What up, B?" You know, and he picks his head up and he knows that's my voice. And then he goes back to grazing and, you know, I go out there a little bit later and spend some quality time with him. But, you know, if you can just shout out to them, they know the sound of your voice and it does make a difference.
Yep.
All right. Last but certainly not least, and this too summarizes the entire list, neglecting your own health. Don't do it.
Ding, 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 ding.
You know. We do. We tend to put ourselves at the bottom of the pile. It's time to change that. Put yourself first. Get healthy.
Yeah.
Stay healthy.
Yep. If you put,
what do you
if you make a, if you make a vow to make, put one third as much effort into your own health as you do your horse's, you will be 100% better.
And this doesn't mean you have to go out and run a marathon or even join a gym or drop 30 pounds or 10 pounds. It doesn't mean that at all. It could be something as simple as substituting that, you know, Coca-Cola for some water or reaching for a bunch of green leafy vegetables instead of reaching for a bunch of potato chips. It could be one small change that you make. And believe it or not, it has an incredible ripple effect. One small change just to put your own health first is going to make a difference in your life and in your horse's life. I swear to you, I promise, I did it. It makes a difference.
Yeah, and you have to put your patient's hat on when you do it. If you're not in a particularly good state of health or, more accurately, fitness, you didn't get that way by neglecting your fitness for 30 days. You got that way by neglecting your fitness for a very long period of time. So put on your patient's hat, find something you can change that you can stick with for the, you know, long term, and stick with it. If you only change one thing and you change one thing every 6 months and add on to it, it makes a difference. So,
that's what I do, because so many people are like, oh, I have to make these huge sweeping changes. You know, I've been neglecting my health and fitness for all these years. One small thing, and then it gives you that sense of accomplishment. You achieve something, and it's cumulative. You set the foundation for staying healthy. A lot of people can get healthy, but staying that way requires a solid foundation. And in order to build that foundation solidly, you have to do it one small step, one small brick at a time.
There you go. You're
all
not
right,
going to get fine changes until
now.
You can do a simple change first. There you go.
Right. That's right.
Well, we're running out of time here, Alina. Thank you so much for helping out with me today with the B team.
The B team. Hey, we did all right. We didn't totally blow things up.
We got all the buttons. We got on the air. So everybody, thanks for listening in. We'll be back again tomorrow morning, first thing with Jamie and Glenn. Hopefully Glenn will be back on the ready to ride list. So you can find the links to today's guests and all of our show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning, obviously. You can also follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And you can have all of the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go by downloading our free app for both iPhone and Android operating systems. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. And thanks to our sponsors, Equestrian Collections and Rider's Sleeves. It's your turn now.
Oh, what do I say? Wait, is there something in pink? What do I say?
Say see you around or something to that effect. That'll do.
Oh, just like goodbye or something like that?
Goodbye or something like that.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for having me on the show this morning. Have a great week, and tune into Horses in the Morning again tomorrow. Bye.
See y'all. Don't make your horse roll his eyeballs at you. Pay attention.
Pay attention.